The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Check out the Pets Life booth at this year's Game Fair to pick up a free sample of their all-natural pet care products made right here in Minnesota. Save hundreds on vet bills by using these safe and all-natural oral care health products. Also protect your pets from fleas and ticks with their natural All Ticks, that's T-I-C-K-Z formula. Type in promo code Omaha for 20% off on all orders. That's Pets Life, PETZLIFE.com.
All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can also find Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. I am joined, as always, by the producer, Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha. What's going on, man?
Not too much.
We are working through some pretty fun stuff for Cold Omaha, getting excited for, I think, not only football season, but a couple things that we're working on in the future. Tom, you're pretty excited about the future of Cold Omaha, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, football is going to be big. Hopefully the Twins can have like a nice little stretch. I know they've kind of struggled recently, but over the last 60 games, about 500, and in basketball, I think basketball is going to be huge with Towns and Wiggins.
Yeah, absolutely. And Vikings bring ratings. You know what else brings ratings? The guy to my left, Mike Berardino, at Mike Berardino on Twitter. Huge ratings. Good to have you in the studio. Even though the Twins are out on the road, you are going to take this trip off. Or are you going to meet them in Kansas City?
No. We have a closing to do on Friday, and I begged off of Kansas City. I don't know what we're doing with that, but sure. I'm not going to Atlanta. There's a select number of trips the rest of the way that we won't cover because budgetary concerns.
How do you feel about those road cities? Like, if you were going, is Atlanta a nice place to visit on the road?
Oh, I've had enough of Atlanta. Remember,
this time of year, too.
Florida.
I was in the NL East there with the Marlins all those years. And then before that, I worked in Augusta. We've talked about that. So I've been over to Turner Field many times. It's amazing that Turner Field is considered a
old ballpark.
They scammed
whatever Cobb County or whatever. Like, they never had a vote.
We had Ben so Deronio bad. On. He had been a member of the SB Nation Braves blog. Smart guy, lives in New York City. He's in finance. And he, to the best of his knowledge, took us through that situation. And it was pretty sketchy how they passed it. Got it into Cobb County, which is on the outskirts. I think it would probably be, you know, Hennepin County in Minneapolis. It would probably be like Wright County having the park there. And so they had kind of just slid it under the table and they figured it out. As far as I understand, though, Turner Field has too many seats. Wasn't it built as an Olympic venue and then converted for baseball? I don't know how the particulars came to be.
That's exactly it. Similar to the Big O in Montreal, you know, which was there for the 76 games and then became the Expos home. 96, I covered those Olympics. Michael Johnson was dominating there. The
Usain Bolt of those days, right?
Exactly. Well, in different events. But, he dominated the Atlanta games. And then Turner Field became their baseball home, and for a while there it was considered pretty much state of the art, but not ever along the lines of Camden Yards because it just didn't have enough quaint qualities about it.
It was just after that era of new ballparks because you had like the 93s and 94s with Progressive Jacobs Field at the time. Ballpark in Arlington had opened. They ushered in that new wave of, and Camden Yards, I think, was the first one. Was that like 92?
New old parks. Turner Field didn't attempt to be a new old park, but the biggest drawback for Turner Field and the reason why they escaped it, I'm sure, is just the geography of it. You know, it's by the freeway. It's in a economically challenged area. They hope that there would be shops and restaurants crop up around there. That never really happened. There have been more probably more muggings than nice dinners outside of Turner Field over the years. That's true. Sports writers have been knocked off on their way to their car, you know, and this has happened. It happened right at the beginning, too. And
that's
so
terrifying.
So you kind of get out of there quickly. But when you're in it, when you're in Turner Field, it's just fine. The other problem is the MARTA rapid transit there doesn't come close enough to it. You still have a good hike, maybe a half mile from MARTA, which is a very efficient system otherwise, but they never had it where you could as Target Field, where you just get off the light rail and you are there. It's not like that. So there's still a hike and post-game, if you're not right there with the crowd, there's some concern.
The other gripe I heard is there's too many seats, and so even in, I don't know if it was playoff games, but they'd have big games, maybe pennant race September, where they couldn't sell out, and it looked bad, even though in, you know, comparison, let's say the Twins sell out, what's that, 39, 37,000, something like that. For them to sell out, they would need, it was a 50,000 or something. And so it's very hard to sell out a building of that size.
Like the Metrodome, basically.
Yeah. So when they would have, quote-unquote, big games and not sell it out, that would trigger people to be like, well, why didn't it sell out? It's like, well, no, it's because of the number of seats, not because of the level of enthusiasm for the team, necessarily.
And that the enthusiasm for the team at that time was through the roof. So when they were planning it, the retrofit for baseball in the mid-90s, obviously the Braves were right in the middle of, at the early stages still of their dynasty, 14 straight division titles in seasons that finished. So it wasn't outrageous, the number of seats at the time. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it could work. But the other thing is Atlanta's just never been a really good sports city. I can go down the line with the Hawks and the Falcons. It's never been a good sports town. And remember asking Ted Turner that around that time, and he was always a straight shooter with anything, continues to be, but he refused to say it was a bad sports town. He said, oh, there's just so much to do in Atlanta. But the fact of the matter is the Braves were, even when they were making their first way back in 82, and they made their miracle run, and they had the Chief Nakahoma TP burned down and stuff. There's always something with the Braves. They were playing to a half-empty Atlanta Fulton County Stadium in September of that year. So that was 82. Joe Torre was the manager. But they're in a down period now, but I don't doubt at all with all the young talent they're acquiring, especially arms and the people running that situation. And John Hart knows better than anybody how to take it from horrible and too big of a stadium, Cleveland Municipal Stadium, to a must-see product that's in the postseason every year, which he did with the Indians in the 90s. And he's overseeing everything still. That there's still hope in Atlanta, but it's amazing. The Twins and the Braves are the two worst.
Kind of a fun quirk on this road trip. Irvin Santana starts this evening, then he'll start again this week against the Royals. He'll face the Braves and the Royals, two teams that he played with in the last 4 or 5 years. I wrote that over the weekend. He says, now I this is Irv himself. Yeah. You know how he is to talk to. He's kind of funny. He says it doesn't matter one bit. Do you think, especially with the Royals, because there are a lot of players he played with still there. It's a team that's been built on. It's kind of like the Twins from 10 years ago, where they kept a few guys around and kind of had a core. Do you think that deep down, Irv kind of holds a little bit more significance there, or is he really just, I go out, I throw the baseball. When Skip says I'm done, and that's it.
He has become a bit of a late career Pascual Perez mercenary, hired gun sort of thing, because if you look at it, if he were to move again on the waiver wire, if the Twins were to go ahead and move him, I don't expect that, but if he found another team, it'd be five teams in five seasons. Because Angels, the last year of the Angels was 12. The 1 year with the Royals was 13. The 1 year with the Braves was 14 when he wanted to go to the Blue Jays, and they were all ready to, Batista and other guys, and Encarnacion, they were ready to restructure their contracts to get him there. So that was a disappointment to him when the qualifying offer blew up, and he had to move on from Bean Stringfellow, who misgauged that market. And then, of course, the Twins era, and now there could be another team formed before he finishes that deal. But I will say he already faced the Braves here and was very good against them. And I asked him on his way out the door that day, I said, the Braves,
I saw you do this.
The Braves didn't try to retain you. I knew they hadn't, and he gave a big smile and he said, no.
Yeah, he laughed. It was classic Irv. Yeah. Nah, you know, they not real interested in bringing big Irv back. He's done basically what they could ask of him this season, and even last season, it just seemed like he picked up steam as the year went on. Does that surprise you for a 34-year-old, then 33? Actually, no. I believe he would have been, let's see, I think he's born 82. Anyway, he's coming up on 34, 35 years old. Does it surprise you he's gotten better as the season has gone on?
He did it last year.
There were other factors, of course.
Yeah, he was not. Yeah, he didn't have to pitch the first half. But he was out of whack. He's a guy who, with a big body and long levers, he can get out of whack. But when Neil Allen helps him click back into place, he can sustain it for a while. He's durable. The big thing with him is Mulder pointed out, there was a period there where he was struggling in the first inning, and it was because he was coming out too amped up and trying to throw too hard in the first inning.
That seems strange for a pitcher of his tenure to be that amped up.
It did. I don't know what it was about. He was, you know, the losing certainly can grind on anyone.
Well, he's like 5-9 with a 3.62 ERA. So I mean, he's been there as they've lost, which is disappointing, I'm sure.
Been a bit of their Shelby Miller from the Braves kind of thing, maybe not to that extent of excellence, but Braves Shelby Miller. But he's given them their money's worth, and of course they did get the rebate on the 80-game suspension.
They
so
sure did.
For every penny they've had to pay him, if you look at, you know, you break it down in a variety of ways that I know you can do, he's probably been... so far, you know, for it's coming up on a season and a half of actual pitching, would he be their most cost-effective, even with that big number, free agent acquisition over a period of time? I mean, Hughes in 14 was great, but, I mean, this is a season and a half of doing what you're paid to do.
Probably pretty easily, I would say.
I mean, he certainly was a guy noted when he came over. He had had a series of 2-win above replacement seasons. He was career pretty much mark him down. He'll get you 2 wins above replacement. Not going to be 3 or 4, but even that was a struggle for the Twins. They hadn't had anybody do that for several years when they signed him. So again, I stand by what I've written, what I've said. It would be pretty odd to dump him. Especially with a very light free agent class of pitching.
So. He's only 33, by the way. Did you say 36?
I think he turns
34 in December.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Turns 34 in December, right around the winter meetings. But he's in great shape. Now, he did have the back problem in April, which was, again, odd for a guy so slender and who does work hard. And all that. I don't know, he overdid it. But he didn't.
Maybe he worked too hard, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have to. He didn't have to go on. Yeah, it was the opposite of some of the other things that other teams and maybe even the Twins have seen with back problems. But back problems crop up with professional athletes, especially in baseball. Repetitive use.
And the other thing that Rob Anthony said, and I had written actually before he said it, which so it was nice to hear it confirmed, was if you're going to trade him, you're looking for a new him in the offseason. And that guy doesn't exist. Depending on how you narrow it down, that guy doesn't exist maybe at all, but also doesn't exist for the money and years you have left tied up in the deal. So if you move Ervin Santana, either, you know, retroactively at the deadline, and let's say we're talking about it after the fact, or now this month, which I don't see, or even this offseason, you really do have to get back the quality and or quantity, maybe both, frankly, for a deal to make sense. In that vein or in that respect, does it make sense to you for the Twins to make a move on him this winter?
Well, I don't want to speak out of both sides of my mouth because I've also, I'm with you on the first part that generally you're going to have a hard time replacing a guy, as Rob said, for a 2-year plus an option. You're not getting that kind of guy for 2 years.
Yeah, the option, you forget about
plus
that.
Plus an option.
That's right.
At $13.5 million a year, you're just not getting that guy. There's a $1 million buyout on the third year. On the final year in that scenario, but
it'd be age 36 season.
And at this point, no reason to think that he couldn't pitch to that value. But at this point, however, it's vital when you are buried like this, like the Twins, and you are in the wilderness, that you continually look for opportunities to trade people a year too early than a year too late.
Keep clearing the forest because you got to make a path.
Yeah, and if you've got people coming along, Steven Gonsalves is not too far away now.
He's done
it looks
a really
like.
Nice job.
He is not too far away. I mean, you'd have to say his ETA is about May or June of 2017 now. And Cole Stewart is okay. It's not too far behind him, probably. I mean, this is the pipeline. Tyler Jay with a little setback, but if he can be healthy, he's not too far away. He's probably pushing it by the end of next year for sure. And also you have to answer the question that Terry Ryan was trying to answer, that this organization has to answer. And, of course, there's going to be a change in leadership most likely on the baseball operations side. So there's going to be a retrenchment at that point where they take stock of every single piece they have and decide who they want to retain, who they want to move, as Dombrowski had to do in Boston and has moved a lot of pieces. All those things in mind, you constantly have to be looking ahead of the curve, stay ahead of the curve, and if you can get more future value for a guy at his peak, if you have determined that this is Ervin Santana at his peak and it's all downhill from there based on what you're analytic people are telling you and your scouts are telling you, and then maybe he's fooling people a little bit with some luck stats. I don't know that that's the case in his case, but you got to at least listen. And you saw what the Yankees did. The New York Yankees are 6.5 games out of the wild, out of the division, and yet they traded off Miller and Chapman, and Miller was under control quite affordably for multiple
years.
On $9 million a year or something, and they made a deal that might set them up for many future years. That's the Yankees, and they're supposed to be in the moment all the time. Mm-hmm. So the Twins are not the Yankees.
Phil Hughes said that to me on Picture Day. He said the fans have no idea how to process this because they've never been in a situation where they've been quote-unquote out of it. Now the numbers say they might still be marginally
close in it. Enough. But I mean, the Royals are behaving as though they're in it. The Royals are 10 out and 8 out of the wild card.
And under 500 besides.
And they're not dumping. They still are firmly in their window. That's the thing there is they don't have an open window for perpetuity the way the Yankees should at $200 million.
So with Irv, to go back to him for a second, there is a lot of gamble on the Twins side, not because his contract is so bad. 2 years, $27 million guaranteed, I believe, is the number, plus the $1 million buyout that would come, regardless of how you look at it. But at his age, you're gambling on age 34 and 35 seasons. Father Time is undefeated, no matter how much Ervin Santana stays in shape. That's a lot of sliders on that right arm, too. That's kind of his bread and butter breaking ball pitch. His changeup's pretty good. It comes and goes, I think. But that's where I think a new GM has to take stock, and it will be in their hands. Because there's between you and me and everybody listening, I just don't think there's any way anything happens in August. I think his value is high in terms of how these things happen in August, and so I just don't see anything happening there. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes over the winter if a new GM just says, look, we think we need one more year to really get all of everything we want done. That's one less year of Santana under control. Yeah, it's time to make a move.
Yeah, it becomes accelerated free agency, the term that Doug Melvin invented when he was still in Texas as GM and went on to Milwaukee. I mean, we've had that as a thing for nearly two decades, and it makes a lot of sense. Even when you're 2 years out, under control for two more years, if you don't necessarily see the potential to retain, or you think that the cliff is nearing, or that the value is just so high and the interest is so high, and again, a dearth of reasonable free agents on the market because so many guys have signed up going forward multi-years, you're going to listen. And there's a potential for an Ervin Santana-based blockbuster for the Twins this offseason. They might even be able to pair a bad deal with them and make some of that go away if there's a team that can't load up with prospects but can't take on money. And there's certainly a few of those that the Twins might want to pair up with it. And the other thing that pops in my mind in terms of always staying ahead of the curve, and I'm not advocating this on your show, but I'm saying that they are going – it's done a 180 since late May. Late May, it was like, oh, that money is still owed to Dozier. Now it's like Brian Dozier is a machine, a power – he's Jeff Kent, with a personality, and they will be – people will come after him this winter, and that will be very interesting, especially when you have Polanco ready to step right in.
I kind of wonder about that. Just he's 29. I mean, how infielders are only good until like age 31, 32, right?
It all depends on the spot. But, I mean – and actually, this is something I want to get into, so we'll just dive right in. As far as a trade chip – there's so many factors to consider here. First of all, you have to know how the new regime views him. He'll be going on 30 next year, late next year. So he's still – or no, mid next year. It's June. I was thinking November for some reason. I think October is Kyle Gibson turns 30 next year. So you got to see how the new regime views him, which is bound to be positive. He has made some changes. In fact, I think I posted this last night on Twitter or early this morning. 759 OPS to right field this year. His career mark is like 440. And I had always contended he didn't need to do that, but if he did do that, he'd become a star. You're looking at a guy that's pretty close to a star right now, wouldn't you say?
Yes, for a period of coming up on 3 months. So you make of that what you will. I mean, because before that, two straight years where his body wore down, he could not produce in the second half. There were nagging injuries. He had the hip problem last year that did not need surgery, but it was serious enough that it was an issue and affected off-season workouts. maybe affected him at the start of this year still. He seems to be past that. Not getting any younger, but not old.
Sure.
But I think it comes back to, in a lot of cases, I mean, a lot of times it's, is there somebody younger and cheaper pushing you from behind who is Jorge Polanco's best spot. We know that throughout the minors. No, it's not an argument anymore. He can do third. He can play third okay. Shortstop, he can make plays, but he's not going to make the deep throw from the hole the way even Eduardo Nunez could. And
that's tough for a team that has a lot of balls in play. You can't give away that part of the field.
No. And especially if you're not going to have a lot of mobility at third.
Right.
So balls, the chopper into the hole with Polanco and either Sano or Plouffe at third, you're not getting that guy out very often. But you could be it's just it all comes down to what somebody want to line up for Brian Dozier at this stage, especially when you just roll the clock back a few months and you think, well, what could we have gotten in May for him? Not a whole lot, because there was great concern. There was great concern out there. Joked with me, where were we? I think we were in Chicago, and something was said about Dozier, and he said, yeah, all he can do is hit mistakes or something like that. And you know, even they just viewed him as a guy who was kind of gimmicky and only had big power to the pole side. And even then, his home runs, I know you have all this, and I could find it if I wanted, but mm-hmm. the average exit velocity must be way higher, and certainly the distance of his home runs has jumped. Probably on average 30 to 40 feet, I would say, because
not a small transition.
I'm just throwing that out there because this guy was a lot of first row, just beat the flower pots.
Fence scrapers.
Yes, right down the line. And he would say shortest distance for a home run is right down the line. Why do I want to hit the ball to right center? He didn't trust in himself that he had carry like that. Well, now there's balls that are going into second and off the facing of the third deck. There's balls that are going easily into the bullpen. That was not Brian Dozier territory until these last couple of months. And, you know, it just hits you right in the face that his peak may have just come wham, it's here, and you better listen.
At a good time, too. What my question is, and I posted this on Twitter yesterday, is, you know, it's uncertain to me what the trade value is of a non-elite second baseman. I say non-elite because he's not Robinson Cano. He's a better value than Cano, but just, you know, indulge
you think?
Me. Yeah, indulge me in the sense of he's not a hitter like Cano. Cano's a smooth fielder. He's a good fielder, but I don't know if you would pick one or the other necessarily. He's not Jose Altuve, who's basically having Joe Mauer's 2009 season, plus elite base running, plus I think he's a pretty good defender besides. I'm not sure about that. But he's not in that class. So you maybe have him next to the Kipnises, the D. Gordons, the Ian Kinslers, perfectly reasonable class, but it's pretty crowded class too. You got Neil Walker, who I believe is a free agent at the end of the year. I know the Mets badly want to bring him back. So the Mets, you know, maybe the Mets are in the market. What I'm thinking though is second base is not necessarily a premium position. I mean, it's more valuable than first base, but it's not shortstop, it's not center field, it's not catcher. And so teams a lot of times will have a shortstop that burns out or it can't handle short anymore, goes to second, or that's just kind of the natural progression. I don't know that second base is viewed as a big time destination for a star. And there are stars there, and that's where I got my words mangled by some people thinking that you can't be a star that plays second base. I'm just saying if Dozier was doing this offensively and playing a competent shortstop, he's a super duper star instead of a really nice player. Do you think that makes sense?
Well, I mean, Craig Biggio and Ryan Sandberg were viewed as stars at second base. And Jeff Kent, like I say, just you know, slightly short of Hall of Fame status. I don't think he'll make it. But I remember when the Giants were winning a lot, going to the World Series, they had Jeff Kent at second. They had Bill Miller at third. And it was like, well, they got a second baseman who hits like a third baseman, a third baseman who hits like a second baseman, and it works.
You can say that with Mauer and Dozier, actually.
or you could say it if you left Polanco over at third, you know, and had Dozier at second. Sure. You wonder too, to take strain off Dozier's body, you know, if he's going to keep hitting like this. And I think I sent in my Baseball America projected lineup a few years down the road in the offseason.
3 years.
I think for 2019, this last offseason, I had the conversation with John Manuel. Don't know what to do with all these pieces. How about we put Polanco at second and Dozier at third? What about that? And I think we considered it, and I think they backed off of it. But You know, that's just that's a weird task because you're not supposed to factor contracts in, but of course contracts are a huge part of it.
Sure.
And so I think we left Joe Mauer off of their future lineup because his contract will be up, but it's a no at first. But not unthinkable that you could take this guy who was a shortstop and then became a very good second baseman, but as he gets into his 30s, maybe Dozier is better at third and Polanco at second.
Yeah, less pivoting and all that. Yeah, just, sure. Just work on the arm.
One of the hardest things to do that fans, I don't think, appreciate based on the things I see on Twitter is making that pivot with your back to the runner.
You torque your back and you get taken out. There's a lot
of
things.
I mean, even though they've tried to make it a safer zone out there at second, it's not safe. It's I saw Preston Wilson blow up Biggio and he missed a full year or close to a year one August. But it can happen. So, yeah, if you got a guy who's got 30 to 40 homer pop, you don't necessarily want him there at second with his back to the runner all the time.
What are you thinking is reasonable value for the Twins to make a move? Now, I'm not necessarily saying we need to come to a deal where it's fair for both sides and we know it will get done, but a name that popped up for me was Julio Teheran. Braves probably don't want to move him, but they're also a team that's got more pitching on the way, Foltynewicz, Whistler. They've spent a lot of picks on young guys. They've been getting back a lot of young guys in trades. They could go to the well and just trade at the Diamondbacks again if they need more pitching. Sorry, that was a joke.
I'd want Tuki Toussaint in that deal, speaking of the Diamondbacks. If I'm the Twins, from what I hear, a big arm.
To get from the Braves, yeah. So if they made a deal, Teheran to me is enough to get back. I mean, it's a guy born in 19...
Teheran, I think.
Teheran.
Maybe that'd be Iran.
Okay.
Like Iran.
So Teheran, I think he's born in 90 or 91, so you still got a guy in his mid-20s. He's got some miles on his arm, but he's had the peaks and valleys, so you kind of feel like it's a guy coming into his own, has had a nice year. That's a name I would look at and think would be a fair deal for the Twins side. I don't know if the Braves probably wouldn't do it. He's got, for as much value as the Twins have in Dozier's contract, the Braves have even more because Teheran's got option years and all that stuff built on the back end. So that's the kind of guy I would look for. If Zach Wheeler, if I had any reason to believe he was healthy or going to be healthy soon from the Mets. They tried to trade him for Carlos Gomez.
Yeah, a little scary there.
But it's a risk-reward. You got a guy with strikeouts, no walks, and grounders when he's healthy. I mean, it's ace potential.
I can see. You could talk me into a team overpaying. Who would overpay for Dozier? I could see a team like the Braves going into a new ballpark. They get a lot of mileage brand-wise out of Freddie Freeman, but they don't have a team that people, certainly their attendance will show, that people have latched onto. Can you imagine smiling Brian Dozier with that accent
and those
looks, grew up a Braves fan, and they're a TBS tries to be a national, America's team. They're not America's team anymore. They're not even Atlanta's team, but they want to be again, and they're going to need that kind of guy. And
I think Dansby Swanson's a Southern guy too. Yeah. So, I mean, it would be the perfect storm of
about those guys up the middle. Yeah. So Dozier was a guy that I know was on the periphery just even a couple of years ago of Braves' interest when they had it the last time they were playoff contenders and they had issues at second. And
they ended up with Kelly Johnson, I think.
Yeah, I remember. They were always kind of a tape and bubble gum over there trying to hold things together. They haven't really had a threat at second for a while that I can remember to this extent. And
not since Mark Lemke, maybe.
he didn't hit like this.
No.
They've had a revolving door at second, really, when you think back all these years. But you could market the heck out of Brian Dozier in the Deep South. And you can market him here, too. I'm not chasing him off. I'm just saying the Twins have his replacement in-house, making the minimum for multiple more years and then under control beyond that. And you have Dozier going into now his 30-plus period coming up. And you also may, very because of this three-month streak and just unbelievable production and power, this is beyond what he'd ever shown us, and we thought that we kind of had him pegged, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
So
we sure did.
If now the imagination runs wild and another team can think this is 30 to 40 homer Brian Dozier for a full season.
Perennially.
You just wait and see who claims him on trade waivers right now even, mm-hmm. and you listen. You listen because somebody could get excited.
Now
who's going to win the World Series right now? I mean, the Cubs something bad's going to happen to the Cubs. It always does.
Of course.
The Nationals, Dusty's going to screw that up. There's no obvious team out there. The Giants, the Dodgers.
Who's the Marlins second baseman?
D. Gordon.
Oh, never mind.
He just got back.
There will be places that you know, somebody could talk themselves into that.
The Marlins could move him to third if they wanted to. They could.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of a team that's kind of like on the rise and maybe needs a little push.
The only issue
know?
I have with that, though, is then you have to settle for non-40-man talent in return, right?
Toronto has had interest in Dozier in the past, and in fact, I'd been told, never have confirmed this fully, but at the very least, conceptually, this would have been fascinating. A couple years ago, a Marcus Stroman, Brian Dozier straight up was discussed.
Wow.
This was before Stroman,
I like Stroman a lot.
Exploded on the scene. He was just on the verge of putting down roots. Dozier had maybe one season. This might have been going into 14, and that would have been an interesting challenge trade.
Risk on both sides because Stroman's got the slight stature, and people don't really know how that works for any pitcher, let alone, I think, a right-hander. So if you make a Dozier deal, in theory, let's say you're Rob Anthony or whoever gets the chair afterwards, you need to get back a blank. Is it a number two starter? Is it a future starting catcher? Or are you just looking for value wherever you can find it?
Always best to look for value, and you figure it out from there. You don't want to do what the Royals did several times in the 2000s when they were trading off Beltran and Damon and Dye, and they got too specific, and they tried to plug holes, and that's how you end up with John Buck at catcher, and it didn't work. That didn't work. So you don't want to do that. You want to get value, even if it's at a spot. Even if somebody trades you three shortstops, you'll figure out what to do with the other two.
Yeah, well, the Braves have all those shortstops now with Albies and Swanson, and I think they have somebody else too. So would there be too many question marks in the infield for you, though? Let's say you're going Polanco, Escobar, Sano in the infield.
Well, when do you want to win again? That's come back to that. When do you have to win again? Do you really think you can win? Not just sneak into the wild card conversation, but when can you win the American League Central? When is Byron Buxton going to be ready to be the winning piece in that run? When is Eddie Rosario's? When are all of his growth pains going to be out of the way, or will you have moved him on by then?
Frankly, I would have moved him.
Yeah, off this past season.
Yeah.
Barrios, you know, the growing. He's not ready to lead you down the stretch in a postseason run in 2017, but by 2018 he might be.
This sounds like 2018 to me.
I've always felt, since I got here, just that it just felt like it was going to take till 2018 for enough people to run up the hit chart, to fall back down the hit chart, to be moved for different pieces, for the people, the true core, to congeal the way the Royals' true core did. It takes pain. It takes time. And the soonest I could see them, based on what we've seen this year, the soonest that they can move back forward and project forward and be legit is 2018. And that should inform everything from what you do with Irvin Santana this winter what you do with who you try to lock up and how you treat Miguel Sano, Byung-Ho Park, all these things. These are the questions for Rob or one of the current lieutenants or whoever is handed the keys in the coming weeks and months.
Did 2015 hurt that timeline? That false positive, so to speak?
Quite possibly. That's why I wrote about the Royals.
The 2002, wasn't it?
Back with the, it was 03, I think. 03, yes. And Beltran was so good on that, and Tony Pena was good on it. Really, you know, it would wrecked, along with other things, Tony Pena's managerial
career.
Was he
manager of the year that year?
He might have been.
Yeah.
And then the next year, terrible start and personal problems, and he was out. But that took the Royals nearly a full decade to recover from what you would say false positive. That's good.
Yeah.
Because that's a great term in modern baseball. We have those. And they also had to have a regime change in there, and multiple managerial changes. And then finally, even then, Dayton Moore and Ned Yost were in trouble at one point because people were running out of patience in Kansas City.
They weren't trusting the process.
That's right. They were in trouble around 2012, and then things started to turn and people saw some hope, and then they took that big leap forward. Now, the Twins have no interest in spending a full decade, but if you look back and you say the troubles really started in 11, well, now, you know what, they've already
8 years.
Yeah, they've already knocked off 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, okay, felt a little better, but not really. and 16 now more pain. You're just talking about, if you will you put up with one more year of pain? Will you put up with one more year for that jump forward that lasts? And now you've set up from 18 to the middle of the next decade, similar to what happened in the 2000s. Twins fans, I think they would take that.
It's merely a flesh wound.
One more year.
Tony Peña was the manager of the year in 2003, I was remembering correctly. So before we let you go, I do want to ask you what your gut says happens in August as far as moves.
That's too hard to say because...
But I mean, do you think... Okay, so Suzuki's in the works. Is it 50-50 he goes, do you think, or that he... That
he's... I'm not sure if he cleared waivers. The more time that passes without another team being reported as the one that claimed him, I'm told, you know, the people who monitor this closely, that tells them that he must have cleared, because the only team that would know if he were claimed, only two teams would be the Twins and a claiming team initially. But
would you perceive still, that as a lack of interest in him, though, if there's no claim because of how little money he's owed the rest of the year?
That's odd. That would be odd to me. He's owed 1.6 at the moment for the rest of the year, and there's teams that need help.
And he won't vest. He's not. No, I don't think he's anywhere
there's
near
no danger
vesting.
Of that. How about Coco Crisp ripping the vesting process? That's a good way to get yourself right out of baseball, really, because everybody knows how it works. The A's they're not the first team to manipulate that process.
He's also not playing that well. I mean, let's call a spade a spade.
He is being way too aggressive with those comments, and he says he's not sure he wants to play next year. I think that may be decided for him. And
funny how that happens.
Yeah, and Suzuki's not sure he wants to play next year either.
You
That's
mentioned that 2
point.
Weeks
yeah.
ago on this, yeah, this he, very
he,
show.
He was very good on that topic when I talked with him in Detroit in July, but he's pretty much going to have to sit down with the family at the end of the year. So teams would can he help you get to the postseason? Is there a team out there? Even if I'm surprised, even there could be a team that thinks it has its starter, but just wants to have better protection behind the plate and a better backup. I mean, that's him at his peak
and
as well.
That's backup money.
That's him at his peak as well. I mean, since Axe Bat time, right?
Hey.
National Axe Bat Day, May 31st. But still waiting on the shipment that everybody thinks we're supposed to get for writing about Axe Bat so much. Maybe you've gotten yours.
Maybe I'll go take batting practice with mine.
I'm hearing little leaguers trying them, softball players from Twitter. It's been amazing. But Kurt has no deals. I would think he's the guy. Guys, that whether it's later today that we find out the last minute one team did claim him and worked out a deal, or he cleared entirely and the Twins would then have until August 31st to put him into a postseason situation, because if they wait till September 1st, he's not eligible.
All right, last thing I got for you. Percentage chance that on September 1st, Trevor Plouffe is still in a Twins uniform?
Virtually 100, because this is not a good situation to move him, and I don't even think they want to put him out there right now because he's clearly not right still, and Molitor hinted at that they'll just see how it goes. I mean, that's one of his guys. I mean, he always has felt better with him on the field, but problems in the field, problems at the plate. The guy's had a miserable year physically, and he didn't even have to go on a deal for the knee, but that would have put a lot of other people out there. So he's just not mobile. And so what you need to do, no team that's contending right now is going to use him.
No, they won't touch him.
And so forget the money. If he was free, they wouldn't. He's just not himself.
Could they?
So, but by the offseason, if somebody thinks that they can work him in there, he's one of those, could be non-tendered now. Could be non-tendered. It's probably the leading candidate right now. But there also might be a team that sees him and they could threaten a non-tender him. They can make a low-level deal for him. He's not going to bring a lot right now. They can make a modest deal for him, and then they have that leverage of, well, we're thinking of non-tendering you. Would you agree at this number before non-tender date? And he might.
But isn't there a rule it can't be beneath 75% of his previous year's salary?
It's 20. You can't cut him
80%?
20%?
80%?
Yeah.
Because that was the Craig Monroe rule with the Twins back in like 2006, I want to say. And
that would knock him down to $6 million a year.
Could the Twins non-tender, though, and bring him back at less? Or is there still that rule?
You can't have you can't offer him less than 80% of the previous year's salary, but you could... I guess you could non-tender and then re-sign.
At like $4-5 million.
I don't know what the right number would be for him, because it depends so much on where he is physically, and can he show some of what he really is in the final month? He's going to get some playing time
for sure
here, because considering what they, you know, it's a shame. Another case of the Twins eventually going to part ways, it looks like, with a player a year too late. Better to do it a year too early, and they're behind on the timeline again, and that's the number one thing that has to change with whoever takes over is they need to make more of those trades where people say, why are they trading him? Why are they doing that? And then they look up in a year, and it's like, well, that was pretty smart.
Yeah, they haven't had many of those.
No.
Yeah, I feel like, honestly, and this is an unpopular opinion, is that I would bring him back next year. If you can get him at a low number and try to get some value out of him, you could use him as a Ben Zobrist light, you know, third, first, wherever you could use him. But the fact of the matter is, if you're going to give him away, he probably still could potentially have more value to you as a flip candidate, or you just DFA him in the middle of the season if he's got nothing left.
The other issue is, I think Trevor Plouffe's value is connected to Sano's elbow, right? I mean, if you don't think Sano can be should be out there very much at third next year, we'll see where the Polanco thing goes. Maybe, there's a lot of ways that could go. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that Trevor Plouffe has, I've written about, he has more value than people perceive. He has in a clubhouse with very few voices and very little veteran leadership. He does have a role there that he's willing to play, but he can only play it if he's productive. And, I don't doubt that he could be a very good bounce back candidate next year. A healthy Trevor Plouffe could be a 20 plus homer bounce back candidate for a team, even a contending team. But
and there'd be value in July if the Twins still had him.
Yeah, so it's just, again, it's the are you going to sell high or sell low on him, because you certainly aren't going to be able to sell high or even sell fairly.
That's Mike Berardino, everybody, joining us again here. Not on the road this time. Do you watch the entire games when you're not on the road?
It depends how much I need to do and what the family is interested in, but I monitor it. I'm not charting anything.
You're for sure on Twitter, though. I know that.
But not if I'm defeating the purpose if I'm kind of live tweet games off the TV that I should be at. But
when you're on a break,
I take
though.
A little break from that. Good. But work on Sunday stories and stuff like that. But I'm paying somewhat of attention because I'm gonna see him again soon.
Well, it's good that you've chosen for us to spend part of your break with us. Good luck with all the stuff with your new house here coming up soon. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.